Grizzle Pod episode 30. We're here, Scott. 30 of them. 30 of them. Thank you, 3-0. Everybody, for the support for these finely curated episodes brought with love from the Grizzle Kitchen, the factory. This is what happens in the lab. We take our, when we put together a Grizzle Pod, it's sweat, it's love. It all comes together. Beautiful, Patty.
Exactly. So guys, thank you guys for sticking with us. It feels like it's been blink of an eye, but we've gotten through 30, more than that when you include our special guests. We're just getting started.
Just getting started, man. Feels good. 3-0. First, we got to thank our sponsor who's been behind us the whole way, Y-Charts. Thank you. From day one, man. Day one. Because this could not have been brought to you. We couldn't do this every week without the support of a fantastic data provider. Fundamentals power us up. Y-Charts is that provider. So a big thank you to the Y-Charts. 30 of these, and we'll do 30 more, 30 more. We're going to hit the hundo soon enough.
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Soon enough, my friends.
Y-Charts is, you know, it's the deepest research and the prettiest charts. That's why we use it.
Yep, exactly. Scott, we got some big news.
Oh,
big news,
baby,
for everybody. Lay it on them. Lay it on them.
All right, everyone. We're giving you a little back-to-back action later this month. It's not time for turkeys yet, all right? Put them away. First, we got Psychedelics Con 1v1. So Tom and I are doing a little intimate chats.
Bring that image up, Scott. Show them what's up.
There it is.
Yes.
November 22nd. Clear the schedule because we're mixing it up a bit.
If you got family over for Thanksgiving, gather them around. Show them the power of the children, especially the power of psychedelics, what the future can hold. It's coming. Scott, this is an incredible lineup back to back. I have to say something, Scott. Our Psychedelics Con and our Cannabis Con, so we're doing back-to-back, Psychedelics Con, Cannabis Con. Put up this Cannabis Con image now. We got these beautifully curated by our
November
wonderful—
November 23rd, by the way.
Yeah. So back-to-back, we had over 20,000 investors.
Smart investors, Tom.
That were viewing our last Cannabis Con and Psychedelics Con. Unheard of. We've crushed the competition in the genre?
Digital,
Scott?
Conferences, I guess. Stream conferences.
Yeah, the conference genre. No, this is not get up there, talk to some PowerPoints. We've real investors in front of the best leaders of the industry getting out incredible information, insights, and ultimately sharing that knowledge with everyone through 2 days back to back. We are excited. I got to say that the Cannabis Con, Psychedelic Con, Scott, when we finished those two, it felt like I was so powered up from all the insights that were gotten from those sectors. And it just gives you a lot of clarity just going through. And it's great to do these. And I love that. So,
The comments after the conferences were a lot of like, wow, that was really, you know, I learned a ton, much more than I thought. And like, that's what we pride ourselves on. It's not about filler. We want to learn with you guys. We want to get powered up as well as power you up. So that's why we spend so much time getting all the leaders who are pushing the industry forward, who are at the leading edge. And so we're doing that again. We're changing up the format to make it even more intimate. So definitely don't miss it. You can get all powered up and then just take it out on that turkey and that Thanksgiving dinner, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah. So that's the one-on-one conferences, Cannabis Con, Psychedelic Con. We got the best in the industry coming for both of those. Guys, make sure that you're getting it all. It'll be packaged up in the pod later afterwards. But if you listening to it live, we take questions. We relay them to management. It's a party. It's a fiesta. It's a good time.
If you have a question, it can get answered by a CEO of, you know, the biggest company in the space. So that's the value of being there live. You can ask questions, and we'll ask as many as we can.
And the giveaways, Scott. The giveaways,
the swag,
the party, the good times. It's incredible. To make sure that you're kept up to date on the latest on those, grizzle.com/subscribe is how you get that. Make sure you're on the list, because then you will get
you
all
get
the
lineup right away, and we'll let you know more information about the conference as we get closer.
Exactly. We're always doing some fun giveaways, so you guys got that coming up. So that is the back-to-back doubleheader, Cannabis Con, Psychedelics Con. Psychedelics Con is on the 22nd. Cannabis Con is on the 23rd, respectively, of November.
There we go.
Scott, what's the lineup today? We got a lineup.
Oh, man. We got to talk about Old Media. They're coming for Dave Portnoy. That's the main gist of what was happening this week. So we're going to explain what's going on with that, because remember, Dave Portnoy is the face of Penn Gaming, one of our conviction calls here. So we got to explain what's happening there. Then we also, it's earnings season, right? We're in the second week of earnings season. There were some fireworks. And remember, Grizzle, we have conviction calls. We have stocks we really like. We lay it all out fundamentally for you why we like them. And a bunch of those stocks have been working this week. We're going to take you through some of those and a little refresher reminder why we like these companies. And then we got to talk about Peloton. They had fireworks of earnings, not the good kind. It was more like a firework that was supposed to go up and it went sideways into the crowd. And there were dead bodies everywhere. So we got to ask the question, you know us, is Peloton going to take you through some of the stuff going on there? And lastly, we got to talk about software earnings. There were fireworks there, good and bad. I'm going to put it all in perspective for you and give you a little bit of a teach-in on sentiment, why it's so important in investing. What is it? So stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
So it's Tom, what are we starting off with, man?
All right. So obviously the big news this week, if you're following it, and you can't miss it because it's everywhere on social, is Dave Portnoy, right? And so you've got Business Insider taking a big crack at who we would say is the king of all media in Dave Portnoy, right? And that's been our big thesis, right? This is the king of all media. So let's talk through the chart, right? All right. So this is just from the last 5 days, because we got to talk through what's happening here. So first, you got basically coming into earnings. Now, they weren't great, Scott. Earnings weren't great, but it was really around just issues around Penn Gaming's legacy business. And from our perspective, this is still a stock that has, in our view, the cheapest cost of acquisition, right, Scott? Like, no one is going to acquire a gambler online sports bettor cheaper than Penn Gaming.
Yeah, so this is the long game. If you can outcompete everyone else on costs, you're going to win in the long term. There may be some competitors out there that have raised a bunch of money and they're spending on advertising, but you can acquire that customer cheaper, make more money. Down the road, if they can't keep raising that money and spending it on advertising, you're going to win. So we're picking that horse, the low-cost guy. And that's
exactly. And so it was a weak earnings. Stock was down, call it 8% on the back of that, right? Between 5 to 8, whatever. But what's followed through on that from this is we're looking on the November 4th their date, is then you get this piece that's been put out by Business Insider accusing Dave Portnoy of all sorts of stuff. Stuff towards women. So accused of allegations involving sexual violence and humiliation. Obviously, this is not a good look for Dave Portnoy. Again, these are allegations, but let's bring it back to that chart, Scott. So then the stock takes another leg down, real big leg down. So then this is what happens is Dave Portnoy puts out a statement, Scott.
As he usually does through his Twitter. He's huge on Twitter, and he likes to do emergency press conferences, so he did one.
Yeah, and he just said, listen, I'm going to go head-to-head against this, and I'm going to, none of these claims of, like, he thinks they were not right, and he's going to go against.
It wasn't the gist, I have nothing to hide, so I'm not hiding behind lawyers. I'm going to come out and do a press conference and tell you what I think happened. Or what did happen, and I think these allegations, they're not true.
Exactly. And so that's how the table is set, right? And so now from our view, end of day, on the 4th, that was Thursday, we said, listen, this is stock's down 22%, right? Most of it is due to basically this piece against Portnoy because he's the face of the company, right? Yeah. And from our perspective, there have been attempts to cancel Dave Portnoy, right? This guy has said racy stuff before. There was something about he was throwing these crazy parties and all the like. But the bottom line is, no matter, you may not like what Dave's doing, but he's always been very clear and upfront that this is who he is, right? Like, and I think that's the allure
for a certain group of fans of Barstool. You know, it's like, it's in your face and it's like kind of a party brand. And so there, you know, people are going to come and take swings at him. And there's probably, like a lot of us, there's things that you've done 15 years ago that don't fly anymore now, but he's a public figure, so he has to live with those.
Yeah, and you know, the reality is he's like, and this is the big thing, and we can kill the ground. Like, Scott, like, So bottom line is, so what I'm seeing is, so what the key thing here, just to talk about here with respect to Dave, is that he is one of these guys that just lays it out like it is, right? It's just like, listen, take me, good, bad, ugly, irrespective, but you're going to get me and you're going to get a truthful me, right? And that, no matter what you think of him and what, you know, irrespective, you can respect that aspect of Dave. And I think that's what the part that comes across the most is that this is a guy that's just shooting from the hip, and as he says it. And there's no one that can deny that, right? That you can't say, yeah, this is a guy who's, whether you like what's coming out of his mouth or not, you know, it's true and it's authentic. And that's what has made him such a enormous figure in media. And in our view, that's what's made him the king of all media. He has been able to really be authentic to who he is. And that is what really carries his brand, Barstool. And that's why they've been able to be a juggernaut force, not just him, Scott, but the way he's been able to sniff out talent. And I'm talking all of Barstool, like their ability to, they basically had the number one pod for women in like the 20 plus demographic in Call Her Daddy. Like this is not just his brand. This is his ability.
He's had too many hits for it just to be him, right? Like the way he sniffs out athletes, how they're starting to partner with athletes. He has a great nose for when someone's right at that meteoric rise and he'll partner with them. And so that's why he just understands media. He knows how to be in the mix when it matters. And so we just find it like, one hit piece, granted, we don't know if the more information will come out, but the way it stands now, he says none of it's true. And we'll get into some of the details of what's going on from the reporter's point of view. There's some stuff going on too.
Yeah. So bring on that image there of basically bring up the other one. Yeah, the headline. Now, this is very interesting here, the headline. So this is the headline is Dave Portnoy, Barstool sports founder, accused of allegations involving sexual violence and humiliation. But the interesting part here, we've taken a snip here. This is important. This is basically they're promoting this tweet. Business Insider is promoting this tweet. It's so they're actually using it to promote.
Sell subscriptions or get their name out.
Exactly, because the entire article is behind a paywall, right? Now go to what Tim Dillon posted. Now, this is fascinating, right? So, you know, there's this woman, Grace Panatta, and she's like, heads up, that Insider is currently offering a huge discount on an annual premium subscriptions, so you can currently pay $4 per month to read incredible journalism like MJN Black's investigation into Dave Portnoy. And Tim Dillon's like, LOL, I mean, they thought this was a good idea. Who thought this was a good idea?
Yeah.
And realistically, like, you know, you're going for the jugular, fine, if you think you have, you know, if you think you have all your ducks lined up. But then to put it, like, it just comes across greasy, right? There's that aspect, yeah. Scott. It comes across greasy. You're putting
like,
it behind
like it's
a
kind
paywall.
Of, it's all, like, a calculated thing to sell subscriptions when you want it to just be like, we were just looking into this guy. We found all this crazy stuff, and we got to tell you
exactly.
About it.
Exactly. And, you know, and then Tim Dillon, we don't have the image, but Tim Dillon shared a DM after, right? And he basically, there was a guy doing an article on Tim Dillon. So Tim Dillon's a big comedian. I think he's the number one comedian in North America right now. But there was a Business Insider journalist who was doing an article on Tim Dillon. And basically that journalist had DM'd Tim Dillon saying, listen, I left insider. And just an FYI, the editor didn't want to run my piece because it wasn't like there wasn't a scandalous element. It couldn't be turned into
a hit piece, essentially.
Exactly. And so that was interesting. So that was a DM to Tim Dillon. So I tweeted this out. I said, listen, there's clearly they have an MO here at Business Insider, right? Yeah,
it looks like they have an agenda where they go in saying we need to find a hit piece. And so we're going to find the information that maybe gets us there because it sells subscriptions.
Exactly. And so like it looks from a surface level, putting together these pieces, it looks like they're trying to be the TMZ of business journalism. I'm not going to comment whether that's a viable business genre or not, but it would suck to be on the receiving end of that shit. Assuming the allegations were not true, and that's what Dave Portnoy is attesting. Now,
it's difficult how media works, right? There's the court of public opinion, and there's the actual court system. Court of public opinion, you're guilty until proven innocent, right? Because like he has to go through all this effort to prove that those allegations false. But if people just read it off the cuff, a lot of them aren't going to look into it. They're just like, oh, Dave Portnoy, he's a predator. That's it.
Yep.
So now his reputation has been hurt and it's on the line and he has to build it back up basically. So that's how journalism works.
Exactly. And listen, again, the point here is the claims here, we're not,
I don't know. More information might come out. You never know. But this is just like the way they went about it.
Exactly. And you know, like, then you're into this world of actual assault, versus just a bad date, you know, and then
yeah, so it's strong it's allegations, just, right? Heading was strong.
Yeah. Heading was strong. And then, but then you get the author, right, Scott? Then you get the author, who basically you can pull up the last one, right? So here's Dave Portnoy. So we got this account here. Anyways, say I have no dog in this fight. But I couldn't help but notice Miss Black, who is the author, had scrubbed her Twitter history right before the hit piece dropped on small business savior Dave Portnoy. Meanwhile, Dave has never deleted or run from anything. But bottom line is the author of this piece has only Dave's like, it's kind of weird. She's had this account since 2011 and only has 133 tweets. Okay, that's kind of, yeah. But then someone, because Dave has an army, a stoolie had found us basically a screen grab of hers days before that had basically thousands of tweets. So she deleted thousands of tweets in preparation for
this to come out.
Exactly. And that doesn't look good. So you got a situation. So our view is, this was – we took a bet on Penn, right? We're taking a bet on Penn. And our view is that, listen, if we know Dave, in any time anyone's tried to take a swing at him, he's come back ferocious, defending himself, defending the honor of Barstool, and doing everything to push back the claims. And the video – he recorded a video. It looked like, hey, listen, he's gonna go full force against this, and he's not gonna let up. And man, you know, it basically I bought these leap calls, Scott, and just to put it into perspective, right? So these calls were expiring January 2024. Long time. I got a long time.
Yeah, you got a long time to go.
So they were $80 calls, and so I was tweeting. I said, listen. From our perspective here, at a bare minimum, Portnoy punches back. You're gonna get this divot. That second, pull that graph back up, Scott. Let me find it.
Yeah. So was it? It was 8% from earnings, and then it was an extra.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Pull that graph. Okay. So what we were saying very simply here is, listen, you got this divot here of like 12% that is open if he can defend himself. And lo and behold, Scott, But oh, he basically
yeah, so he
filled
is,
back
as we speak, he's still defending himself. And so at the end of trading, you know, it gave back up. There's still 6% to go, right? Kind of. You could say if he exonerates himself totally, it would go back to just from earnings. And maybe it might even go back up from there. But it's, so it's still down an extra 6% just due to the Business Insider article, basically.
Yeah. So he's clawed back 6% of it. There's probably another 6 to go. And frankly, if he ends up totally burying Business Insider, I think you start to fill and look forward, which is our view, is that no one has a lower cost of acquisition than Barstool Sports. And secondarily, Barstool Media, no one's giving any credit to the value of that business inside this gambling company of Penn Gaming.
And that's so why we own it, right? It's not for Penn Gaming. It's what Barstool can do for Penn Gaming.
Bingo, right? And you know, I was going back and forth with someone on Twitter. I said, listen, at the height of it, Vice was worth $6 billion. Now, again, Shane Smith is a total dog and a total liar. That is not what – and again, I will tell you this. What Dave isn't, and everything that I've seen, he's not a liar, Scott. And everything he's built at Barstool has been absolutely brick by brick. It's all very real versus Shane Smith from Vice. He was just a total fuck.
Some
scumbag.
Smoke and mirrors there for sure.
Yeah, fake, everything was fake. Right?
Yeah, fake visitors, fake pieces of the building, fake commercials, whatever. Yeah, you can read about it online if you want to learn about it more.
Exactly. But bottom line is, Scott. So you're talking about, and this. I think this is interesting because this is like. This is what I live for, kind of trade of the heat. You see what's happening.
Yeah, this is our thought process. We know what determines where the stock goes, right? It's kind of the Portnoy show. So this is why we're talking so much about Portnoy. We have to figure out whether he survives because that'll determine whether you still own this stock or not.
Exactly. And so from my perspective, that you've had this history of him winning, getting canceled, not getting canceled. Someone trying to cancel him doesn't win. Okay, obviously these allegations are the strongest of all his historical ones. But if you know the track record of what he's always pushed back on, he's always come across on the other side and always been bigger, right? If you look at it, all of those allegations have passed. And what did he do? He created the Barstool Fund, Scott. He created the Barstool Fund that ultimately helped more small businesses when nobody in all of America could put that shit together. But Dave Portnoy did, and that's, you know, and that's, the guy has a heart of gold. Obviously, you may not like all his antics, but that's for you to decide.
Yeah, his heart's in the right place at the end of the day, it seems like.
Exactly. And then secondarily, he's built a media juggernaut that you cannot dispute with. And there's too many wins under his belt for him to say that this is a fluke and, you know, Dave, you know, if Dave gets canceled, it's all over. No, this guy's he's the brains behind the magic there.
As we speak, he's dropping more tweets. What I like to see how he's dealing with this is he's giving you more information, which is not what guilty people do. Guilty people go and attack people with no information. He's dropping tweets that he's dropping DMs with girls. Like, so that's not what someone would do if they have lots of things to hide. Right. So it feels like he's taking the right path if he has nothing to hide.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and again, you know, he's saying he's going against the advice of his lawyers. I personally don't think there was one message there. He said he was going to go to, I think it was like a horse racing thing. He chose not to and apparently Business Insider now is targeting, advertisers specifically that are working with Barstool. Like, this is all like at the end of the day, Scott, again, allegations aside, and I think you and I were talking about this, assuming nothing comes of anything, this is like a WWE fight.
Yeah, it's just better for the whole media. It's whipping all the media into a frenzy on this. Like, you'll see more articles.
Exactly. And realistically here, this is the old media versus new media in Dave Portnoy. But just coming back to the trade itself, just like the short trade there, I talked about it on Twitter. I said, listen, the best way to play this for me is to get torque into this is through leaps, right?
Yeah, so I think there's two ways to do it. It was good. What you did is definitely like a very viable way. This is what we always say. You decrease your risk of getting the timing wrong when you buy long dated options, because he has till 2024 for this thing to work, right? And so you buy at a time like this where there's a big drawdown, makes a ton of sense. The other one you could do where you get even more torque, and it's all about sizing it right because it's very risky, is you could have gone closer to where the stock is today, expiring in 2 weeks because you think it's going to bounce back big. But with that, you don't want to put as much money because if you're wrong, remember, you lose everything in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so it's sizing and the lower risk, probably better return in the long run is to do the long dated leaps.
Well, it's actually, so it's a trifecta, right? So okay, you believe that Porto is going to bounce back, you buy the stock. Okay, the stock went up 7%, Scott. Now, the leaps, I wanted more torque to this. So I bought January 2024 leaps. Those went up 30%. So I got 3x the return that I would have just owning the straight stock. Now, if you bought near dated, like a couple of weeks expiry, obviously that would have been much more than that. So
yeah, now you have kind of a stock replacement here because you can hold them for so long. You can let that story play out. That's not just about Business Insider. It's about Penn Gaming and Portnoy.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you guys have followed us and we're pretty open about how we do things and how we think about them. It's just really, we just lay out our process and, I'll just place the bet.
Yeah.
But leaps have been a huge part of our story of powering up, right? So a big part when we went through the bottoming in COVID, we chose not to buy risk, we chose not to buy the riskiest stocks to come back.
And not to buy the stocks themselves, right? We said, this is the time, if any, you're going to do an option strategy. And the option strategy we do is buy the leaps on less volatile stocks, right?
Exactly. And so we did leaps. So this was March, April. We did leaps on Adobe. We did leaps on Visa. We did leaps
even ExxonMobil.
ExxonMobil. So we were running leaps on all of this, and that basically turned what was up 40% or up 30% from bottoms from these stocks to up 200%. And that kind of is and again, we turn that on. Scott, the way we think about that is not like, oh, what leaps am I going to buy every day? These are when the pitch comes, then you're like, what do I got in my tool belt? Ba-doom.
And you got to be patient because that pitch took 10 years, really. It took COVID to come. And then you see a downturn. You say, well, in a downturn, I want torque to the upside because that's when you get big moves.
Exactly. And the greatest thing about options, Scott, and this is what we're going to talk about it again with another stock in ARK, but when do you employ options, right? So if you really love a company, but you don't know time specific when it works, you own the stock, of course. But if you can then do it two dimensionally, say, love this stock, here's where I think it's going to go, and I think it's going to do it in 6 months or 12 months. Now you've added an extra piece of information that makes you pretty lethal, right? And that's when you should use options. And we're going to talk a bit about that with respect to a natural gas play, but that's how you do it.
Yeah, from a risk-adjusted basis, that's just a better way to do it. You can do options on an ExxonMobil, which is not a very volatile stock. And so if you got that trade really right, you might have made 35%. But because you did the options, you're up 100% in something like 6 months without taking a lot of risk because it's a big company, free cash flow positive, all that stuff. So it's just a way to maximize your returns on a low risk position.
Yeah, it's been a huge, huge tool for us in terms of because, we're F1, we drive F1, we drive fast, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's if there's probably dividend pods that a lot of people, you listen to us for this stuff, man. This is the,
is the way to hit retirement post-haste.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm going for, man. I want to hit retirement as soon as possible.
Boom.
Yeah.
And then you just keep building.
Yeah.
Scott, what do we got? So
we got to talk about earnings. Because
the
last 2 weeks have been fireworks. A lot, everything's reporting, and a bunch of our conviction calls reported as well, and things have been going very well lately. So we just want a little refresher, take you through some of these and show you some charts. Yeah. So the first one we got is, so on September 13th, we were looking at energy. There's been a big spike in commodities. Electricity prices in Europe were going to the moon. And so we said, you know, we're bullish on electricity and natural gas specifically being a stopgap as we transition away from oil to windmills, stuff like that. So we want to own gas names, right? It was RRC and what was the other one?
Pull the tweet up, Scott. You got the tweet. Just so you guys, right? So, and again, we're open source here, right? This is not like you're going to read about this in a quarterly letter.
Yeah, you all got this. You could have bought these stocks when we were buying them too.
Yeah, so this is September 13th, 2021. We just said, listen, Sprott Uranium Trust applying the squeeze to the thinly traded physical market with the U.UN, which is the Uranium Trust. So what we just said, listen, regardless, electricity prices will go higher, right? So we just say, listen, we know how it's all going to play out on the uranium side. There's a squeeze. It's a thinly traded market. There's getting a squeeze. But the bottom line here is there's something going on electricity. Electricity prices are going much higher. Grizzle is bullish, capital letters, natural gas producers, Long Arc and Range Resources. That was September 13th. Scott, you want to fill them in what's happened since?
Yeah. So they've had a good run since then. Up. So Range up 30%. ARX, the ticker, is up 32%. That's since September 13th. So handily outperforming the market over that period.
Yeah, and this is when you get torqued up and it was ready, go, go. And so ARC reported, I just want to talk about that for a second here. There's a phenomenal analyst on Twitter, because Twitter has some phenomenal great minds. Natural Trust, my man for natural gas. So he's got this stock on a run rate basis. This is a 23% free cash flow yielding stock, Scott. And they've got hedges on. So they haven't really realized all of this natural gas price lift. If you were to take those hedges away, it's a 30% free cash flow yield. 30%, Scott.
And look at where are you going to get 30% in the market? If you want to buy a government bond, you're getting like close to zero, right? 30 is crazy.
It's crazy. So, you know, bottom line is, you know, we're saying straight up, this is a stock that should be much, much higher. And so obviously it had a great rip. Like we were just telling Billy, listen, this is a stock that's doing 30%. We think we're in the age of natural gas, the era of natural gas.
People are going to come around. They haven't come around yet, but we know we're realists. And we think as people want to transition away, limit fossil fuels, easiest, right, cheapest way to do it is natural gas.
That is it. And so this is a stock doing 20 to 30% free cash flow yield, depending on hedges off or not. But bottom line is that's an insane free cash flow yield. Even at a bare minimum, this is a double, just getting to a single digit free cash flow yield, which is what all their peers are trading at. So from our perspective, it's done incredibly well in this period. Now, I will tell you, so what I did here, Scott, is because I had a feeling about the near dated just squeeze that was going to come here in this in ARC and natural gas players. So what I did was I bought near dated expiries on the ARC. So at that time with September 13th, when we were like, listen, we're long ARC. I bought these things that were expiring November 19th.
So, a different strategy, right? That was the short dated we're talking about, where you get a lot of torque. So that's where if you feel very confident in the timing, then you play something like that.
Exactly. And so I just said, listen, you know, all these things coming together, squeezing electricity, natural gas is going to, you know, and everyone knows us for what we do the best is this catch-up trade. And this was an incredible catch-up trade for us. So what we did there is I basically bought those options. And those things went from 75, 71 cents to now 290, Scott, 290. So that's,
nice trade,
you know, but again, that's part of your arsenal here, right? So you got the stock itself doing a very healthy 32%. And then you have the options going plus 250 plus, right? Yeah. So
you don't do everything all the time, right? There's certain times for different tools in the tool belt.
Exactly. And again, you know, these things can go the other way too, right? So the whole point is size your bet accordingly, but all of it is an art, right? You know, like you're layering it on, you own some stock. And then I'm like, listen, I need to own some more torque on this. How do I get more torque on it? And that's how you build it all. But that's just, hopefully this illuminates everyone how we think about these things, and at least, you know, just how they all work. And again, you're going to get things that expire to nothing, right, Scott? Like, you're going to, like,
yeah, like we've that's happened to us. So that's why it's all about sizing it and picking the right time, not just buying puts and calls because you're bored or you think you always have to.
Exactly. Right. And so, you know, So I bought these pen ones. So I'm just see how these work, but those are leaps. Right. So,
yeah.
But anyways, that was our Nat Gas call. And I know many, you know, if you're on Twitter, follow us on social, you know, everyone knows this has been quite a nice run for Nat Gas, and we're not done yet. So
no, we think it's a multi-year call, obviously, but if you're buying options, it's not on the multi-year gas call. It's on, you know, right now the world needs gas. There's not enough being produced.
That's right. So and that, what else?
We have one that you don't even need options, and it just IPO'd, so there weren't options, but it made you enough money anyway. That's Dutch Brothers Coffee. If you live in the West Coast, you've probably heard of it. If you're east of the middle of the country, you probably have not heard of it. I hadn't until I looked at this IPO, but it's been
so, guys,
one of the best.
Guys, this is Grizzle. Scott nailed this, right? So Grizzle, there were so many different IPOs. Scott's like,
bullseye.
This one. and
trust me, I look at a lot of them and you can kind of tell if it's an undervalued business or not. And this is just one of those where it was like cult following, can grow for 13, 15 years easily. And it wasn't priced that high compared to like a Starbucks. So then it worked.
Guys, just to put into perspective and how Grizzle does it, right? Nobody else was covering Dutch Brothers IPO. It was only Scott. So when you're looking at this price action, when you're looking at, we've done this for Beyond Meat. These are massive companies. We've done this for Compass Pathways. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. And Scott did this for Dutch Brothers. Guys, this is hard stuff. This is basically no one else is covering these companies, but we're going out and finding the gems. This is the kind of stuff you can expect from the ticker GRZZ. This is the kind of stuff we look for.
Being first, right? Because when all this coverage came out, the thing was already at 70, 80 bucks. But we were saying, so, I mean, doesn't always work out this way, this well, but we're saying, so upside, you know, it IPO'd in the 20s. We said upside, it could easily go to 80, 90. We kind of balanced it with projected where it would go over time. Obviously, with IPOs, when you have not a lot of shares available, they can run really fast. So ripped up to 80, peaked at 80. It's down off a bit. But, I mean, kind of went exactly how we thought it would. Just a good company overall.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well done, Scott. And those who followed, Scott was just doing play-by-play pre-IPO. Nobody else out there covering Dutch Brothers but Grizzle.
Not in a two-minute video laying it all out for you, right? You have to read like a 30-page report that comes a month later. So that's why subscribe to Grizzle.
Exactly. So, kudos, Scott. Nicely done.
Right, let's keep it rolling. What's next here?
Woo! Compass
Psychedelics
Pathways.
On the move. So this week, Psychedelics is getting a bid again. Tom, why is that? Is it fundamental? Yeah. Is it sentiment?
Well, you know, so we've clearly had a sentiment shift, and we've talked about this. You know, we're very plugged in, right? So when we feel things and we were seeing things move, I just said, you know, I think it'd be going back 2 weeks, like since October, right, Scott? I've been talking about it. It's like, listen, I'm starting to see something happen here. It's you know, we're seeing Compass Pathways is now like turning into the lead caboose, if you will, Scott, and it's this Comp 360, that's their drug to treat treatment-resistant depression. We're going to get data from their 2B, phase 2B coming out end of the year, or we expect by the end of the year?
Yeah, I think they expect by the end of the year.
Exactly. So we're looking at a situation, and we believe the results will be very good there because we know the power of psychedelics, and we know the power specifically of psilocybin. Which is basically the active ingredient in Comp 360. But bottom line is, you had this stock go from 30 bucks to 50 in a New York minute, Scott. We're at 49 bucks. Yeah. Basically, it just boom. And the one thing, again, we want to talk about here, this is very important for the psychedelic space as a whole, right? This is your lead car. So
yeah, it's the bellwether in psychedelics.
Because it's your first one coming out. So we have to really stress here, Scott, listen, come listen to Psychedelics Con. The one-on-one conference, company after company after company. We're going to talk to all the heavy hitters. That's on November 22nd. But the setup couldn't be better here, Scott. Could not be better.
No. So it's perfect timing, right? Because we have some big news that could be coming out of the bellwether that would lift the entire industry. But more importantly, you tune in, you hear from the experts on what's actually going on, and then you know how to read information like that. You need to be like, okay, what does this mean for this other stock I own? Or what does this mean for the industry overall? Otherwise, you're just grasping at straws. You know, are you getting FOMO? Is this not actually good news? And they're going to sell off later. So that's where you get that really like key knowledge really fast with tuning into the Psychedelics Con.
Exactly. And, you know, the one thing we've always preached, right, and Scott and I were talking about it, we just like, listen, we've always talked about this. Listen, I have no – these – we know we're in categories that are going to – that have massive total addressable markets, right? And we know we're invested in the leaders, right, Scott? So when I think about it is, okay, so the key thing is always just have a position. Have a chunky position. And don't sweat it. Don't get, oh, it's not sentiment's not right. Because you don't know when it's going to wake up. And when it wakes up,
it's so fast, especially in these industries that don't have as much volume as like a GE or an Exxon or something like that. You'll miss it. You saw that today in cannabis. We don't know if cannabis is heading to higher highs. But when money comes in, there's such low volume. Cannabis stocks were up 10 to 15% today. So it's one day. Incredible. If you miss that run, you miss 15% returns. So that's why you just need to believe in the market and the long-term outlook, and then you have to be playing in it and just own it, let it do its thing.
Yeah, so you think it's worth talking about? I don't think we have a graph on it, but I'll talk about it. So we talked about Compass Pathways, but it is very worth mentioning here. Obviously, it's been a tough year for cannabis. It hasn't had the regulatory tailwinds that that everyone was hoping for, expecting. It just the politics has not, you know, synced up, right?
I'd say part of it, the financial industry has kind of been closing off to cannabis businesses, to cannabis investors, and that has been a double whammy on top of not getting those catalysts. So it's just the industry, nobody's really invested in it. If you think it, when you say no one, the big institutions, the big banks, you just can kind of feel they're not in there because it's just so hard to own these things right now, regulatory wise.
Yeah. And you get to this point, right? And I had a tweet out today. I said, listen, you know, everything is a process, right, Scott? You know, you have this massive sellout. It's this channel all the way down, and it sucks. It's painful. And again, this is also why Grizzle preaches having exposure to multiple growth sectors, right? If I only felt one sector was it forever, then, you know, okay. But no, you know, we've got a pretty clear view that there are a lot of things that are going to change the world. It could be bioplastic. It definitely could be psychedelics that's going to treat depression. It's going to be the legalization of cannabis. I can go on and on and on, and that is what will fill the GRZZ portfolio.
But you got to play in everything, right? It's too much risk to say one is going to work, because what if it doesn't? Then you're sunk.
Exactly. And the other part too, it is, you could come to me and say, you know, well, if I don't have, like, I'm going to come to you and say, well, I got these other five things that could be multi-baggers. And you'll be like, yeah, those actually could be. So you want exposure. You don't know how this is all going to play out. And the point is you're having your bets distributed between these disruptive areas, right? And that's the key part, right? So you have this channel down, right, Scott? You have this channel down. It's shit for everyone. Everyone's like, just wanted to end. And you're like, when's max capitulation? And people, you're going to get – people just say it's max capitulation today. I'm not in that – like, I know it's a process. It happens. But then you see these long wick candles up like today, Scott, and you just – they're like – I'm not saying this is the bottom. I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying this. There's a process here of basing, Scott. And when all the bad news is there, there's not a crumb of good news, you get this wick up, the sector, it has the potential after that wick up, and basically stocks were up 10 to 15% one day on Friday, right?
It's a little bit like there's no pulse, you know, and then you get that little like EKG machine or something. Today was just like, just to get things going again.
Exactly. Now, I would say it's we don't even need follow through here. We just need it not to go down from here for cannabis, yeah. right? And yeah. just wait
just
for
to,
the correct
just to happen. Reach the base. That's the most important thing.
Exactly. And so the basing process is happening, right? And I'm just saying, listen, I have a high probability it's happening. You know, this could be that day. The greatest thing said to me by my great just you get these
your great uncle.
No.
I thought you were going that way.
Like my great, yeah, he's kind of like my great uncle. Okay. But yeah, you know, mentor. I was looking for the word mentor. But yeah. He's kind of like he's like drinking.
He felt like uncle. A great uncle at the end.
Yeah. No. So I had the great pleasure of working with one of the great portfolio managers, Charles Edwards Kerr. I got to, you know, he's phenomenal.
Give him a shout out.
We worked together in London, England. He was one of the top Japanese portfolio managers over 3 decades, Scott. Like, just like incredible. Wow. Like, and Japanese stocks are not for the faint at heart. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about the psyche of just highly volatile stocks. Just because Japan was a go-go market, right? And I was a go-go investor. He'd had a ton of history investing in these stocks and just innate, you know, just seeing through. One thing he told me, and we would always look at charts, be like, okay, you know, you'd see these dead charts, right? Just dead. And you're like, okay, I want to take a position. He's like, you know, you can always wait for the first 10%. Who cares about the first 10, 20%, but make sure the catalyst is real, right?
So yeah, and that wait for confirmation.
Exactly. Because you're playing for a multi-bagger. That kind of got me thinking about that, you know, I always just think about that. I'm like, listen, I can miss the first 20% always, you know, but I just want to make sure that, you know, you get confirmation, et cetera. But bottom line is, you know, this is a sector that's not going away. America's on its pathway to legalization. And, you know, is this the point? I think we're in a basing process here, Scott.
It feels like that for sure. And days like today definitely help because, you know, now we're 15, 20% on some stocks above the lowest they got of the year. So that helps. Yeah. All right, let's keep it going. The next, I think earnings were today, actually. Oh. Yeah, it was today. Airbnb, yeah, look at that. So Airbnb is another one. Long-term conviction call for us. And you know, things are really starting to come and play out for these guys. They look like a COVID beneficiary. It wasn't just, so they got hurt when everyone wasn't going, you know, traveling the world anymore, but they've transitioned. And what's working now is people are staying longer. They're exploring new areas and they need a house to stay. So that business is not going away. But now with COVID kind of on the defensive, people are going to go on those trips again. So you get that business coming back along with this new business you never had before. So you're seeing the first taste of that in this earnings season. That's why the stock was up so much. And then we have a good chart here. I'll explain it to you. It's just looking at their kind of EBITDA margin, which is basically like cash flow. So this is one of the few IPOs that was profitable when they went public. And we really noticed that. And that's one of the reasons we liked it so much. And year to date, it's producing a lot of profit.
It's incredible. And so the CEO is like, listen, this company is Airbnb is uniquely positioned for this travel revolution. And it is a travel revolution post-COVID, right? It really has been. It's been incredible. And again, this is one of our conviction calls. If you followed us, you know, Scott wrote about it extensively. We said this is a core position in your disruptive portfolio.
You didn't even need to read the article. We had a nice little 2-minute video for you laying it all out. And I have a little snippet here just showing what we're playing for. By 2030, we're playing for a $550 stock. We're at 200 now. We think so. 550 is down the road. You take that back to today, you're at 250. So that's where kind of we're playing with now. The thing is back on the move. Hopefully, we'll hit 250 in short post haste. And then what it does is it marches towards 550 over time. But what we love about Airbnb is, you know, COVID changed them for the better, even though they had that period where they really had to make some hard decisions. But then they have all these other ways they can try to make money. And if they hit on any of those, well, then you have even more upside, like their experiences platform. They've been struggling a bit with that, but that's, you know, they still get to 550 just with the core business. So if they have one of these things that really takes off and juices interest in the product, well, there you go.
And so you ultimately, depending on the performance of those businesses, you can obviously, you will obviously revisit that target as well.
Yeah, exactly. But with what we know today, we're still happy with this much upside over time. So Airbnb, yeah, we like it.
This is the way to do disruptive businesses. This is the way you look at them.
Yeah. And then, so there's a trend going on in software. You know, we talk about software a lot, but software is eating the world. That's the saying that's popular. So you got to know what's going on, because there's just exciting things going on. There's companies disrupting how we do business, live our lives, and they're growing so fast. And this is a market that's starved for growth in certain areas. So even though some of these stocks may look expensive, it's because they're the best of the best. So there's a trend going on in software as a service I want to make you guys aware of, just so you understand how the market thinks of these companies, because it really is a like winner take all mentality here.
Okay.
So let me show it to you here. So there was this tweet from a guy, Jamin Ball. He's really good on Twitter if you want to follow software companies. Year-to-date returns, companies that are high growth, 34%. Companies that are mid-growth, 1%. Companies that are low-growth, declined 5% this year so far. So what that says is investors really do believe it's winner-take-all in software, which is the right general wisdom. And so they're backing the best companies, and growth is partly how you judge a company is great. So
Scott, I got a question for you here, right? Because like this last week has been – it's been crazy because, well – we're going to talk about Peloton, right, in a little bit, right? But these high growth companies are always at the risk of misses. So do you know what I mean? Like if you miss your growth targets, then you know the knives come out really quickly. I think we saw that. Who did we see that with? Vimeo.
Twilio. Twilio missed by a bit. Yeah. So it's a double edged sword.
Vimeo missed as well.
Vimeo did too.
It was huge. But it's fascinating because what this shows me, correct me if I'm wrong, what this shows me is that the high growth companies are still hitting it.
Yeah, so that's right? The thing. If you just bought a basket of the high growth, some people are missing it because it looks so expensive. But the reason is these guys are growing so fast. They're the best of the bunch. So it's one of these things where it looks expensive today, but the way they're growing, it won't be expensive for long. And even if you had some of these Twilios, you know, the problem is when you're expensive and you miss estimates and don't grow as fast, you can fall a lot. But if you own the whole basket, the other ones will make up for that. And you saw that the whole basket of high growth companies up 34%. If you bought the low and mid growth, oh, maybe they don't miss estimates and go down, but they went nowhere. So the thing is, in this market, people are willing to pay for quality. Who knows down the road, you run the risk of those selling off more. And now what I need to get into is talk about sentiment, because this is very important when you're understanding those high growth companies versus low. Sentiment is something that's very important to investing when you're a short-term investor. If you look at what drives stock prices in the short term, sentiment is a big part of that. Over the long term, it's fundamentals. But think about it. Earnings come every quarter. In between that, there could not be a lot of information. So sentiment is just how people feel on a company's prospects. Do they think it's going to do better than yesterday? Do you think it's going to do worse? There's a way to measure that, and it's called the multiple. And you hear that all the time in Grizzle. We talk about price to sales multiples, EBITDA multiples. It's just, what is the multiple of some cash flow number that people are willing to pay? And by watching that, you can tell if sentiment is getting more bullish or bearish on a company. And so I have a really good chart to show you guys that. So this is the multiple of sales that people are willing to pay for high growth companies, mid growth companies, low growth companies. If you're listening to the pod, basically they're willing to pay a lot for high growth companies, a lot less for mid growth, and not very much for low growth. So 34 times sales for high growth, 15 times for mid, and 6 for low. What's important here is a stock, if the multiple's going up, the stock price is going up. in most cases. And so that is driving a lot of what's happening with the high growth guys, not with the rest of software. So this year, high growth multiples have gone up from about 30 times at the beginning of the year to 34. But also these high growth guys, they keep raising estimates. They keep beating estimates. So that's also contributing. But then you look at the mid growth, low growth, their multiples have actually fallen. So that hurts stock prices. So that explains a big part of why they've underperformed this year.
Yeah. And that explains, like, okay, so if you're buying the basket of high growth, the challenge is as soon as someone thinks, well, you're not high growth anymore, you're falling from 34 times to 14 kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And in down markets, all multiples compress close together. So you have farther to fall on the high growth guys. But while you're in this type of market, people say, use this argument. They've used it for 3 years. Well, I've been following this industry closely. You would have missed out on hundreds of percent returns. So it's one of these things in a normal bull market. Buy quality and you'll be rewarded. Right now we're getting it through multiples going up, but also results are better than people expect. But you just have to be cognizant that when things sell off, these guys could fall further for a time, but over the long term, their results are just better than everyone else. So they'll win out. Yeah. But it's just good that stuff. It's very important to understand sentiment, because that is what is driving stocks over, you know, a 2 year period. If you look longer than that, then it's fundamentals more than anything.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's software. And then why don't we end it off with something that's a stock that's not a conviction call. And for good reason, it had a pretty abysmal earnings. Peloton.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. Peloton is one of these. Man, it's so COVID supercharged this stock. It really
that's what we're getting indications happened. Yeah.
And, you know, I think Scott, we were talking about it and you're like, listen, you know what? COVID did a lot of things for a lot of companies, but this was a very specific case where it likely pulled forward a lot of sales of bikes that were going to happen in the future, right? It just brought all that right here. And now you're living with the hangover.
That's the huge danger. So with Peloton, if you bought it anytime after July 1st of last year, you're down right now. So that's the risk. Yeah. If you buy things where COVID is the only reason they accelerated, this in software, people thought that COVID was really the accelerant, but a lot of these guys are keeping up their growth rates. So it just kind of, it set them on a different path. Versus Peloton, it looks a lot different.
That's a great compare and contrast, right? So we have software and they're just keeping banging out numbers irrespective of COVID. And arguably, like, it's almost just, it's really ingrained that in the new world, like, you know, people still aren't going back to the office. It's the new world is here. Yeah.
They just create more data than they ever have before because we're on our computer now instead of out at the office. And so you need a product that helps you with that.
That's right. Whereas this is, listen, you know, now gyms are opened up again.
Yeah. So if you see the trade now, those in-person gyms, those stocks are reaching highs from the last 2 years while Peloton is is melting down. But I have two fundamental things to mention on Peloton that kind of explain some of this. So number one, growth got supercharged, but it's just been going down and down and down. So they were growing over 200% a few quarters ago. This chart that I have here, they're growing 50%, but that doesn't include this latest earnings. They're only growing, I think, 14% or 8%, something like that, the latest quarter. The worry is, does it go negative versus last year, next quarter, or the quarter after that?
Sure.
And then one more thing is, so things are basically going back to normal. They had that whole, you know, Peloton ad that went viral, not for good reasons, but people bought the bikes. And then we had COVID. They had to spend almost nothing on marketing. Now it quickly is going back to, well, we got to spend a lot to bring people onto the platform.
Yeah.
And you also see that with adding bikes. They were adding 50,000 new people selling them bikes or treadmills for a while. Then COVID hit. They started adding, in one quarter, they added 400,000 new people. Now they're already in the latest quarter down to adding 150K. So this is like where the rubber meets the road here for Peloton. In the fourth quarter is their best quarter because it's people, you know, presents for Christmas and getting ready for New Year's. They're right at where the sales they did last year. So what we want to see in this fourth quarter, are they going to kind of be flat? If there's a decline from last fourth quarter, then people are worried, man, it could get even worse. So that's one of these things where we're not going to be bottom fishing on this. We want to see that things have plateaued, and now Peloton is, you know, a good company. They've opened a new segment in, you know, at home kind of like community exercise.
Connected fitness.
Yeah, connected fitness. And so then they could be set up for another run after, but we're not jumping in now.
Yeah, and you know, some of the learnings from this thing, and I'm just, you know, thinking out loud too, right? So, you know, we were original, right, when it IPO'd, we're like, listen, this embarrassed promotional CEO.
We had fun making fun of it, but.
Exactly. We had a lot of fun. And the stock just, it was just treading water, and then COVID hit.
And it was going down. I remember it was at 25, and then when COVID hit, it went to 18.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And but then, you know, then we just took all shorts. Like, we just felt like, listen, having shorts in anything right now, having any short of position puts, whatever, just take it all off. That was just, we just didn't know what kind of response you were going to get from, you know, from the Fed. You know, we were going to see unlimited liquidity like nobody's business. There was no reason to be short anything. And again, there we got, you know, from our perspective, took us out of that. Like, we cleaned everything up, but it just set up where, like, whoa, this was an incredible supercharge. And the one thing that I have, just one thing that is very a fair takeaway here, is that users of the Peloton bike are they're wowed, right? They're super fans, Scott. There is something genuinely magical about the system. Yes. And that's something I can't deny. And I'll say this, you know, if we start to see a basing, like, we're not buying falling knives here, but if we start to see a basing here and we can get our heads around the valuation akin to a Airbnb type thing, right? Like, Scott, you know, we can say, listen, connected fitness is going to grow here. I don't know if it's all going to be from the bike. Maybe it's from the
treadmill, or they do something else. They do a rowing equipment or whatever. Like, that's where you got to think ahead. It's not just about a bike and it can be replaced with an iPad, right? Then they keep rolling out the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. As long as they have the community, then keep doing that.
Well, exactly. And you know, one thing that we highlighted early on, and Scott, you know, it's always a great tell when you have a promotional CEO, it usually ends badly because they overpromise. And this was a case where they overpromised. The reason the stock is down 35-36% in one trading day is because the CEO just couldn't get enough of the intoxication of
driving his stock higher.
Exactly. And that is one of those things where, you know, just great follow on Twitter, Bucko. I mentioned him last week, but I'll just say this, you know, just that idea of what he was doing, a compare and contrast, like, you know, you can have a CFO that is too conservative, right? Always under promising, over delivering. I think
what you want, because if you watch him, you start to catch on to that, you know, they're going to beat, and so you own the stock.
Exactly. And the example he gave there was Facebook. And then the other side of that is that you have, so again, something that we look for, a part of our entire checklist, is how promotional is the CEO? And again, this can be a double-edged sword, right? Of course, you're going to get, when the stock's working, this is a guy who's going to pound it for you and make sure he's everywhere telling the world how great it is. But by definition, as soon as the wind comes out of the sails, now you're caught in a situation where you've made real grand claims. And now the worst part of that, Scott, is you have a credibility problem. That doesn't happen to the CEO who underpromises and overdelivers. So again, he's not going to give the analyst community, give investors everything they want. You know, he or she's not going to do that every quarter, but you know, it will, over the long term, that's a better outcome.
It makes your life difficult too. What if there's a company that goes up 10% every year and just consistently goes up 10 versus a promotional CEO? He could still deliver 10, but what if it runs up 20 and then gives back half every year? That's a much more difficult thing, where you go into the psychology of investors. Maybe you get worried, something's changed fundamentally on that drawdown, and you sell. So it's just more volatile, more risky, tougher situation when you're getting to the same place at the end of the day.
Exactly, Scott. And I'll translate that, right? So one one CFO gives you kind of steady Eddie because under promising, over delivering. Okay, so you're gonna get the steady Eddie much higher.
You get 1% returns a month or something, so you end up up 12 or something like that.
Whatever it is, but bottom line is you get a re-rating higher of the stock because they're because it's just you're like, listen, this is a management team that's not shaking the ship. The problem the other way, you may have the exact same business, but you got this erratic CFO. We're going to knock the lights out next quarter. Don't really knock the lights out. But
we missed.
It's the same. We missed, but it's the same kind of trajectory. What you end up getting is a lower multiple. So what ends up happening is stock volatility is actually very important because if you ultimately, through the way you guide this street, et cetera, end up having a much more volatile stock, even though your earnings end up in the same path, your multiple on those earnings are going to be much lower because
full circle back to sentiment, because part of multiple is sentiment, and part of sentiment is, do you trust the management team or not?
Bingo.
So there we go.
Bingo.
There's your little fundamental lesson for this week's pod.
Ooh, man, that was a show, homie.
We had to do it up, everyone. I'm sorry. It was long, but it's episode 30. We had to do a big download for you.
Yeah, you know, and we actually had way more on the schedule. We're like, wait a minute.
It's we actually had to cut it back. We'll have to do it for next 3-1. We need something to talk about.
It's a long day for Scott and I. We're almost about the clock to midnight here. And, you know, especially on a trading day, like you know, Friday, you got earning, and especially when it's earnings season, it's like, but we're like, listen, we need to get this into your hands for Saturday morning, so it will be there. A big thank you for joining us on the journey to 30. Don't forget, November 22nd and 23rd, Psychedelics Con, Cannabis Con. You can sign up, get details, grizzle.com/subscribe. Scott, thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. See you next week.